Hello, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. I'm Jeff Beagles. We are starting a little bit late today. We're hoping for Lance Medow, who's relying on some public transportation to try to get into the studio today, and he'll be here with us shortly. But another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Again, guys, tomorrow there will be no show because the Giants are still on their abbreviated summer schedule, if you will, trying to take a little bit of time off before the Giants season gets started here real soon, folks. And I will tell you that there's a lot of excitement around the building. I'm sure that there's a lot of excitement from Giants fans. We'll take your calls today at 201-939-4513 if you're interested in jumping on with us. We'll talk a little bit of Giants. And again, we're getting close. Giants report 1 week from today. And so if you go to Giants.com, you'll be able to pull up the Giants practice schedule. Again, not all practices are open to the public, but there are many that you can come out to. So just check out Giants.com. Look for the schedule, the dates that the team will be open to the public for you guys to come on out and see the preview of the 2017 Giants, one that we all look forward to. It's going to be an amazing year after all the things that have gone on in the offseason. A lot of great players to look forward to seeing in training camp. And what's nice about the Giants is that they are at their home. You know, years ago when we used to go up to Albany, a lot of the fans had to travel up north to go see them. But it's very easy to come down and see the New York Giants at their practice facilities. And we will take some calls at 201-939-4513. And once Lance gets here, we'll talk a little bit about and see what he has to say about the upcoming season. The off season is over. Officially in 1 week, the Giants will start their training camp, and it's an exciting time around here. So we're going to go to the phones, and our first caller is Antonio from Manhattan. Antonio, how you doing? Jeff Beagles here.
Hey, Jeff. Nice for you to take the solo mission right now.
Listen, so I'm telling you, I was telling the guys here, Dan Simone is with us today. I said, listen, I've done enough BBK Lives that I probably can open the show.
It's exciting. You can do the whole show by yourself if it's possible.
Well, that's all right. I like my guys next. You know, I don't have a pecking order of who I like the most, but I like all three of them that I usually have the show with, and that's Lance and Dots.
Yeah, you guys have a nice continuity and stuff like that, you know? So it's good.
So we're going to get. Yeah, go ahead, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. So I wanted to talk, you know, yesterday I heard you guys, you know, it was a. It was Lance and Paul talking about kind of like plays, and they wanted to see standout performances and whatnot. But, you know, and what I want to see is, you know, I want to see the coaches step up, especially the offensive coordinator and the head coach, McAdoo, because what I want to see is just, you know, different formations. I felt like last year they just wanted to have, like, their best three players out there when it was Shep, Victor Cruz, and Odell Beckham. And, you know, this year, I not necessarily want to see the best three players out there. Well, because not necessarily, we don't even know who's the best three players right now. You know, we got, you know, Brandon Marshall, you got Shepard, you got Odell Beckham, obviously, and then you got the tight end rookie. So it's like, you know, I don't want to necessarily have all of them on the field at the same time. I want us to create different formation matchups. So if it's, for me, it'll be okay if Shep is not, you know, on the field the entire time, because we just want to create matchup problems. And I feel like last year they just wanted their best players out there and not necessarily have matchup problems. What do you think?
Well, I think that to answer your first question, I think that the play calling, when you talk about last year and we went back to that that formation, that 11 personnel, you didn't have a fullback. The tight ends were not, you could really count on them a lot. You now have Ingram in there. That's a guy that's going to be able to. You talk about matchup problem. That's definitely going to give a matchup problem to the defenses they're playing. Now, not wanting to have all your best players on the field, I would say that I would like to have all my best players on the field, but I would also like them to be in different positions. You know, get Odell in the slot. Get Brandon Marshall in the slot too. Do some different formations. I think you will see a lot of that this year. I think they've started to work on that in the offseason because of the personnel groups that they have. They've went out and they got some players. They drafted some players. They're now going to be able to put the offense in different formations. I don't think you'll see 11 personnel as much as you did last year. I think you'll see a lot of different change-ups and different guys in different positions. So it's going to be exciting. You know, as we all know, Antonio, on paper, this team offensively looks like it can match up with anybody.
Absolutely.
But, it, you know, it's, until they get on the field.
Just to follow up on that question. So last year we had a lot of 11 personnel. But I mean, even 11 personnel to me wasn't even that bad. But I felt like it was the 11 personnel, but it was the exact same formation also. It wasn't like trips right or stuff like that. Why was that? I mean, if you have any idea, why did it do it like that last year? And you know, why would they change it up this year, you know?
Well, they're going to change it up this year because they have the personnel. I think last year you had some injuries. You know, you had Victor Cruz who was out of the lineup. You had things like that. You didn't have a lot of depth behind the other guy. Now, towards the end of the season, you saw some of the receivers come in there and try to get a look and see if they could play.
Right.
So I think that now you go from last year to this year, the depth at the wide receiver position for the 2017 Giants is much different than it was last year. Now, that's going to change. That's going to change a whole lot of things when you're going into a game. Now, the thing that you have to look about is when you go into game day, who is going to be the guy that doesn't get a jersey that day, the inactive guys. So, but I think for the most part, depth at the wide receiver position going into training camp, this is going to be one position that's going to be hard to make this team because there are so many good receivers on the Giants. So we'll see what happens. And Antonio, we're going to go. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. We're going to go.
Thank you, Jeff. Have a great one. Okay?
Hey, I appreciate it for you calling in as always. Big Blue Kickoff Live, and we love our fans here, and we appreciate you guys calling in. We're going to go to Smash, who's in Rome, New York. Smash, how you doing?
Hey, Jeff. How are you, man?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you today?
I'm actually really happy that I get to speak to you right now. It's my first time calling the show, and you're on. And I really appreciate the fact that you're actually on the show.
There is a first time for everything. You're a first time caller, and I'm a first time hosting the host of the show. So I'm opening the show.
I appreciate it. I really do appreciate it. I'm not a first time caller, but the first time I've actually called with you there.
I got
I really appreciate the fact that you're the only one running. You're just holding it down right now, man.
I don't know where Lance is. He's on a bus somewhere, you know, or, you know, as this Amtrak stuff that's going on. Who knows? But you know what? All I know is that we're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. We got you on the show today. So what's going on?
Special teams. That was your thing.
Oh, yeah.
As far as I called about Evan Ingram, I know he runs a faster 40 time than Odell does. Do you think to maximize his potential for more reps on the field, they would possibly put him as a punt returner?
No, I don't see him being a punt returner. I really don't. I don't think his skill set is there. I know that he's fast. But, you know, those punt returners, they're very agile. They can make guys, you know, miss. And, you know, I just never seen a big guy like him. I mean, he's a big dude now, you know, so I don't think they'll utilize him at the returning position. You will see him play special teams, especially in training camp and in the preseason. He will be on a lot of special teams because that's how you get indoctrinated to the National Football League is even though you're a first-round draft pick, you even go back and look at Prince, you look at all these guys who were first-round draft picks, they became good special teams players because they're rookies. They got to be able to go into the game and understand the game at the level of speed, the play, and not only from your position that you got drafted for, but you have to know how to play special teams because remember, there's only 53 guys on this roster. There's only so many guys that get a jersey on game day. You have to be able to play other positions. So Ingram, he will definitely be in there on other special teams plays, but I don't think you'll see him in a punt returner. I'll tell you who you're going to see a lot of punt returning activity is going to be out of Travis Rudolph this preseason. Take a look at him. He's one of my sleeper guys I have making the team because of his special teams play.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. Thank you, Smash.
Pleasure talking to you, man.
Oh, my pleasure, too. Thanks. We appreciate that. Again, we're on 201-939-4513 here at Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are waiting and anticipating Lance Meadow to come in walking in the door. He doesn't have to squat down. He can clearly walk right through the door without ducking or nothing. But right now he's ducking a bus line somewhere. He's on his way in here. But we're continuing to take your calls and talk Giants football. Once again, we're excited about the season. We've got 1 week away from training camp. For those that just joined us, remember you can go to Giants.com and tune into You can look on the schedule, all the practices that are open to the public. You can come down, watch, and also there's a lot of activities going on other than the practice. There'll be alumni out there signing autographs on certain days, so lots of stuff to do. Make sure you get here early. There's always lines to get in. Make sure you bring water. One thing that I've noticed the last couple of years, Danny, as you know, that a couple two years ago, they didn't have the stands with the covers on them. So there, it is shaded. The stands are shaded because, really, they put those things up out in the middle of the parking lot. It's a little bit hot out there. But if you are planning on coming out to Giants practices, make sure you bring some water. Make sure you bring some sunscreen and cameras. And one great thing about coming out to practice in training camp is how accessible the players are. I mean, to a point. They're close. You're right up there. You know, you're not in MetLife Stadium 100, 200 feet away from them. You are right on top of them, be able to get firsthand look at what the team's doing, and it is a lot of fun. So especially on the weekends, it gets crowded. So if you're going to come out, make sure you come out early. So we're going to go back to the phones. Again, if you want to call in, 201-939-4513. We're going to go to Shrays in Massachusetts. How you doing, Shrays? Hello, Shrays? You there? Nope, I don't see Shrays, Danny. All right, well, I do not know how to work my little magical board over here because, Schmelk has put the Charlie theme song on here, but I don't even know what – it should have a red button on it because he uses it so much. But we're going to go to one of my favorite callers. That would be Charlie up in Portland, Maine. Charles, how are you, buddy?
Hey, Jeff, I'm here to bail you out. I'll be your co-partner until the last comes in. How's that?
All right, let me pull the chair over, and I'll just make believe that you are sitting here right next to me, Charlie.
All right.
How you doing,
hey,
man?
I'm good. I hope everything's going well. Hey, I Gil Brandt came out with his NFL's greatest punters of all time. Did you see that?
I did not see it.
He has 14 best punters, and you were not even on his list.
Oh, well, what do you do?
That is pathetic. So I tweeted him, and I wrote him, and I said, "What? How can you leave Jeff Eagles out?"
Did he answer you? No.
No. But, I'm gonna keep doing it until I get an answer, because, you were the punter who had the most kicks inside the 20 of any NFL punter ever. You had 559. You had over 40 yards a kick net, and you played for 22 seasons, durability, and you won a Super Bowl. And you're not even on his 14.
I'm probably 15. That's probably right there. I'm close, right?
That's okay. Pathetic.
That's all right. Hey, listen.
Let me tell you who he's got on there. Just to give you, number 14, he had Marquis King. He had Dave Jennings.
Okay.
Donnie Jones.
Yep.
He had Thomas Morstead.
Yep.
An old guy. Glenn Dobbs. Andy, yeah.
Wow.
And he had Andy Lee.
Okay.
Pat McPhee.
McAfee. Yep.
McAfee. And Johnny Heckler.
Hecker.
From the Rams.
Johnny Hecker. Which, by the way, Johnny Hecker, just so we're not going to spend too much time on punting here, but I will tell you this. If you want to get a kick out of something, go look at Johnny Hecker's numbers from last season. They are off the charts when it comes to punting. He had the best season in the history of the league punting the football last year. His net average was, I'm guessing, was 44, 45 yards. That's net average now. Just incredible. But you know what, Charlie? That's all right. I don't care. I really don't. All I know is that.
Yeah, but that isn't right. You know, and then he had Sammy Baugh, number one. Shane Lechler. He's still playing. Yeah.
You are absolutely butchering these names, by the way, Charlie.
Yeah, I know. It's bad. And Ray Guy was number four on his list.
At least we got one of them in the Hall of Fame, and that would be Ray Guy. So I would have to put him up there number one. So I would disagree with Gil Brandt, but listen, I don't care. I know if you made a list, Charlie, I would be on your list, right?
You would be number one, or behind Ray Guy, maybe number two, you'd be one or two.
So let's get off the punting.
No respect, and we've got to turn that around.
That's all right.
Somehow we have to turn that around.
Come on, Lance. But, Lance is now, Charlie, not to interrupt you, but Lance has found his way into the building.
He did.
Yeah, and we appreciate, Lance, it's obviously, I told everybody that you rely on public transportation.
Oh, no, I rely on a motorcade of transportation, yeah. I think is a better word to explain. So there were some security issues that we ran into in terms of getting over to the facility, protocols, people, you know, decided to take some time off today. We had some replacements. When you take all that into consideration, Jeff, it revolves around a very in-depth process, as you know. But it's better to be here at least now to get in time for Charlie's phone call on the punters
Charlie,
and everything. Yes.
Charlie has his way of making it to the caller list pretty quickly.
I was going to say, yeah.
And, you know, so it was fun. And you know, the fun thing, not only is it fun having Charlie on our show, but it was fun that I was able to open up the show today.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you know, we like to give everybody.
And Dan has told me that once I opened up the show, he's never seen the board light up like it has before.
Well, you have that effect on everybody. That goes without saying. So I don't think that's necessarily a surprise.
And then we get Charlie to call in, and all he wants to do is talk about punters. What a great day this is.
See? It's all adding up. Let me guess. Charlie's talking about an article that recently came out terms of the top punters in NFL history.
That is correct.
Why am I not surprised? Yeah, rankings exactly. And Charlie and debate. It all goes hand in hand.
So, Charlie, you got anything else for us today? Because, I mean, usually
I'm good. The only thing is like, I just want to say, look, if, you know, Eric Flowers, if it doesn't translate into his playing better on football, he should get a GQ spread because, you know, he's slimmed down. His agent should at least try to get him that before the season starts.
Maybe make a little more money off the field, you know, in the GQ. Maybe there's a Big Man magazine or something that he can be the cover guy of. You know, who knows?
Well, you should be his agent, Charlie. You should consult with his representatives.
There you go, Charlie.
That's right. I'll get a cut. Okay, guys, have a great weekend.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, Charlie. Take it easy. You got it.
Lance, it's great to see you.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, it feels like forever.
Well, it doesn't. It feels like forever because it has been.
It has been, I know. Well, we got to talk to John and the scheduling and everything.
Well, listen,
yeah.
I mean, you and
purposely tries to break us up.
Are getting ready to be, you know, partners again for our pre- and our post-game shows coming up on the season. So, as everybody knows, Lance and I do the pre- and the post-game for the Giants on the weekends, if you will. Well, not all weekends.
Well, sometimes during the week, depending on the schedule.
You know,
yes.
But it's come around already, and I, you know, at the open, I was telling everybody that the Giants are 1 week away from training camp. I mean, it's already here, and I think there's a lot of excitement, a lot of buzz around the building, and it's just, you know, I don't know how much more we can talk about what's going on because we need new stuff.
Well, you're right. I mean, at this point, I think everybody is yearning for some actual football activity with the pads on. Before you know it, it will be here. They're
going
to report.
Easy with the pads.
Well, the pads will slowly work itself into the mix. But Wednesday will be the last day where the no players are here. Then Thursday they report, and then Friday they'll have their first official practice. So before you know it, it'll be right in the thick of things. And actually, believe it or not, there's some teams already that are going to start to report, Jeff, because the Hall of Fame game is right around the corner.
Yeah. Actually, not complete teams, but I think there was five teams today in the National Football League that opened up their rookie training camp. And they, you know, a lot of teams like to have their rookies come in 2 or 3 days before just to – you know, learn the schedule, kind of get indoctrinated to what's going on a little bit. And then when the veterans get here, obviously they know what's going on. So it's kind of a transitional period between that. But it's exciting. Yeah, about five guys. Yeah, because a lot of teams, you know, the two teams that are going – who's playing in the Hall of Fame?
Well, the Cowboys, I know, are one of them. I forget who Dallas is. We can look that up right now in terms of the Hall of Fame preseason games. They like to match up two teams that have representatives.
I'll tell you who it is. I believe it's the Seahawks.
You may be right about that.
Because we did our last preview of the teams the Giants are playing was the Seahawks last week.
Well, it's actually the Cardinals.
The Cardinals. That's who it was.
Yes.
It was the Cardinals. Exactly. That's what it was.
It's another team that you had a connection to.
Well, John, on all of our previews, John put me on the three teams that I played on.
So that's what I'm saying. So it's all mission and mashing at this point. Yes.
Lance,
in terms of
the
makeup.
Favor.
Yes.
Grab that Gatorade bottle over there.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Listen, I'm a jack of all trades today. I'd
of
be more than
are.
Happy to assist you with that.
Hey,
yes.
Lance, grab
anything
the
else?
Bus. Grab
do we
the
need
bus.
A, you want a meal? A meal while we're at it, too? I mean, I feel like I've done about just 1,000 things this morning. Anyway, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Getting you set for the start of training camp. Jeff has also taken part in a feature that we've been promoting all along, 30 questions in 30 days leading up to training camp. So we'll see if we have some time to get into that. I know we've been promoting it a lot throughout throughout the course of the week, but we do want to hear what you have to say about a number of these questions. We'll carry that in to next week as well. All right, let's get the party and the festivities continuing here on the
of
phone
course,
line
yeah.
since Charlie set the tone. Dave is in Cranford, New Jersey. Dave, what's happening?
What's up, Dave?
How are you guys?
Doing good. Well, Dave. What do you got for us?
Lance, just to let you know, before you showed up, it was the show actually changed its name to Eagles Kickoff Live.
Yeah,
before it was Big Blue. So
exactly.
Make sure you're aware of that.
we're changing the acronyms on the fly here. Yes.
And so, two quick seconds. How is Zach handling the heat down in Miami? I've been reading articles.
He looks like
he's in a good place to have a big season down there.
He's been down there for going on 3 weeks now, and I appreciate you asking. For all those that don't know what I'm talking about, my son Zach's down at Miami. He's going to be punting for the Hurricanes next year. They're down there training. He loves it. It is hot. The thing about Miami, there's not a lot of reprieve in the weather.
Yes.
It's 85 at night and 97 in the day. But they're up early in the morning running, and he is acclimating himself really good, and I'm excited to watch him play. I appreciate you asking. Thank you.
Good. We're excited for him too, Jeff. So, guys, a question. I've called it a couple times. We talked about the NFC East, I think, a little bit ad nauseum. I wanted to take a little bit of a question outside the NFC East and kind of get your guys' perspective beyond the NFC East, mainly moving towards, looking at teams like Atlanta and Green Bay. I'm very fascinated, and Jeff, maybe your perspective on this, which is, all this negativity around Atlanta coming off of the Super Bowl, and the disaster that it was. But at the end of the day, they're still a great team.
Oh, yeah.
And they're still a really high-quality team. And if you take away all the negativity around them, having the Super Bowl hangover, I still think they present a really big challenge to anybody that wants to come out of the NFC heading to the Super Bowl next year. Love to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I think you're spot on, and I think you talk about that Super Bowl hangover. It is prevalent. It happens. You look at all the teams that go to the Super Bowl, especially the ones that win. Sometimes they don't even make the playoffs the next year. But I think Atlanta is a different story here. I think that they have something to prove again. I think that they have a leader in Matt Ryan. The team itself is still put back together pretty good, and I think they'll come back with a vengeance because, really, when you think about that was the tale of two halves in that Super Bowl. I think they got something to prove, and I think that they're going to be a team to look out for. Now, Green Bay, I think Green Bay is in a they're in a little bit of a quandary over there, too. There's a lot of talk about their head coach and this and that, but I think the Green Bay Packers are the Packers. They're going to compete.
They've been consistent.
They got a good quarterback. They've got a good offense. Their defense has improved. So I think both those teams will be two teams to look out for. Luckily, we don't play any of them.
Well, that's the old schedule, so don't look there. You're going to get fooled. We've been fooled on previous programs.
Yeah, what the heck
is going
with Schmelt?
We had the new schedule up, and then somebody was playing mind games over there. I don't know.
Just as you think that I can't come through. I've already come through once today.
I know. Well, I was going to bring it up for you right now. You didn't even have to do much work here.
Okay, no.
I can bring it up for you right here.
I'm going to do
more you than
got
that
thing,
so I got it right here. All right, fair enough.
I am actually going to
you're
going to
actually put it up. Oh, excuse me. Okay, I got you.
Look at this.
I see what you're saying.
Okay.
I hope there's a pin, though, and I hope it cooperates for you over there.
No, there's a pin here.
Okay, all right. I didn't know that you had to print it out. Look at that.
There we go.
Problem solved.
Well, I do know, looking down on this, that we're not playing Green Bay or Atlanta. So there you go.
So now you have the accurate assessment. But you were making the point about the Falcons and the Packers. You think you're going to be very well in the mix again.
Yeah.
And I would agree with you. I think Atlanta has a chip on its shoulder, and I think they'll probably use that as motivation. And even putting that aside, if people don't like the mind games, Atlanta's coming back very strong. They've improved their defense over the last few seasons. They've got a lot of firepower on offense. Green Bay's been pretty much the poster child of continuity and consistency when it comes to the NFC. They pretty much make the playoffs. You can pencil them in every single season. And there's going to be some turnover, though, and that's guaranteed. On average, there's about four teams combined between the AFC and the NFC that wind up making the playoffs the year after they missed the playoffs.
Right.
So assume that that's going to happen. Now, does that bode well for the Giants? Does it not bode well? I mean, it's hard to say because we don't know necessarily how the landscape's going to play out. But the teams that made the playoffs last year, and there were six in the NFC, I would say there's going to be at least one or two that don't wind up making it back.
No. And there's going to be one or two, obviously, if the two that don't, that are surprises. Okay?
Yeah.
I think you look at Tampa Bay, they just missed the playoffs last year at 9-7.
I think that's a good one.
I think Tampa Bay is a team that you have to look out for. I think, you know, they are on the Giants' schedule. We know that. That's going to be a team that I look for to maybe make the playoffs, that one of those teams that, you know, didn't, that does. What do you think that one team that may not make the playoffs that did last year?
That's a great question. I would agree with you with Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is my team to watch out for. Arizona would be the other one on the Giants' schedule that was on the brink of the playoffs last year. They had a rough go, a lot of injuries, 7-8-1. In terms of the teams last year that made the playoffs that I think could be in danger, well, one of them on the AFC, I will tell you, I think is Kansas City. I'm a little bit concerned, the loss of Jeremy Maclin. I understand they're built on the run and they're built on defense, but you know they've lost a few guys, and I think that may wind up hurting them in the long run. In terms of the NFC...
Well, let me say with the AFC, yeah. I see a team in the AFC that didn't make it last year that I think will make it this year. It's the Titans.
I agree with you. And Baltimore. Tennessee and Baltimore, yeah. I think, are two really good ones that missed out. In terms of your question, the NFC, I'd probably say the Lions, in all likelihood, are the team that I would say I think is going to have a rough go to make it back. And the reason why is I look at the NFC South this year, Jeff. I see a lot of depth. I think that's one of the most deepest divisions. And when you take that into consideration, we said Tampa Bay's in the hunt. Atlanta's in the hunt. I think Carolina's due for a bounce-back campaign, which means that I would not be surprised if maybe only one team from the NFC North winds up making the playoffs.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, and if you look at that NFC South, you got the Buccaneers. The Saints are improved. They
yep.
seem to be. And the Panthers. So, yeah. I mean, the Vikings, I don't see. Chicago, no way. The Rams, no. San Francisco, no.
Quarterback questions. Arizona and Seattle, to me, are the two threats in the West. We went over the South, and then the NFC East, a lot
man.
Of depth, and it's always a dangerous division.
If you're looking at that NFC column, and you see all those teams, and you look at the divisions, I got to believe the NFC East and the NFC North are the two divisions, to my opinion, that are pretty stacked. NFC South, I mean, you got Seattle and Arizona. Those are the two. They're going to battle it out. I think those are the two that you're going to, you know, one of them will obviously go. But, you know, the NFC North, eh. But East and South, East being number one. I think the NFC East is probably going to be the toughest division in that NFC. I mean, every one of those teams has improved. I mean, Dallas is coming off they won the division last year. I think their defense needs a little bit of help, but I think that, you know, the Giants, the Redskins, and the Philly, they're all improved. All improved.
And the other team to watch out for, while we're talking about teams that may miss out, Seattle is one of those teams we always tend to pencil in. They've got a good defense. I don't know. You know, between the running game question mark, the cornerbacks got some injuries. This could be a year where, you know, maybe they take a dip, and maybe Arizona reclaims the West, and then that opens the door for another team elsewhere in the NFC.
Really, when you look at Seattle, they've been a good team for a while, and eventually that stops, and you know, this could be the year that happens, and again, that's one team that is on this schedule for the Giants, and you know, you hope that they're hit them on a. You know, on a bad day for them that day.
Well, the good news, of course, is the fact that this season the Giants are not going to Seattle.
Well, they're going out west enough.
They are going out west enough, correct. But usually when you think of Seattle, Jeff, as you well know, you don't want to go there because that adds an extra layer of difficulty. The fact that they're going to come cross-country perhaps makes it a little bit digestible, but I agree with you. Seattle's still a very tough team, and they've proven that even when they go on the road, even though maybe their record doesn't show that consistently. Whenever you're built on defense, you're extremely dangerous. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Appreciate all the phone calls, as we'll keep them coming here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How about Treyas in Massachusetts? Treyas, what's happening?
Hey guys, I finally made it. I tried to call them.
I thought you hung up on me. I mean, I announced you. I probably butchered your name.
See, and you were boasting about the solo show go smoothly, and then all of a sudden, yeah.
That's right. You're back. That's what's important.
Jeff did a really good job, and I appreciate Lance, man. Ice cold. Came in late, no problem.
No.
Just chill with it.
He's the man.
Ice cold. That's awesome.
He is the
man. All right. So what I got for you guys is, first of all, I want to talk to, like, as you guys were talking about Seattle.
Yep.
You know what I think? It's going to be a little bit different than what you guys think. A lot different, actually. Who they drafted, Malik McDowell, second round or first round, whichever round they drafted him in, he's going to be a game changer for their defense. Malik McDowell has the capability, the NFL athleticism, to play nose tackle as a 295-pounder. Mm-hmm. He's that strong. And he can play edge rusher. and he's been successful playing edge rusher. He is he's amazingly – the only question mark was with his work ethic, right? And even that question mark was kind of iffy because he early on in the season, he was actually really, really hardworking. But as the season progressed and the team had no shot of winning,
yep.
He basically started giving up on plays and stuff. Well, the plays he couldn't make, but he still gave up on them, and that shows, like, bad football spirit and all. But I think in the Seattle locker room, he can probably regain his confidence and work ethic. So that's going to be dangerous. So we have to see how that pans out. But if Malik McDowell pans out well, then the Seattle Seahawks defense is going to be dominant, like borderline unstoppable. Because if you generate that much force off your offensive line, off your defensive line, you have Michael Bennett, who is already a force.
Cliff Avril, another one.
You have the rotation of rushers. You have Jaron Reed, who's already growing. Like, if you followed, I followed actually Jaron Reed throughout last season and saw him grow from just a run stuffing guy into more of a pass rusher. So he's actually developing fairly well. So we have to watch out for those guys. But what I wanted to call in here for was to, you know, just give people some excitement for the Giants offense, all right?
Oh, I think people are excited.
Yeah, but, like, you know, those are some naysayers out there that think, his offensive line won't even give them time, won't even give Eli time to throw. First of all, if you have five options, right, Odell, Shepard, Engram, Marshall, and Vereen, right off the bat, five options. All solid options, all game breakers, possibly, right?
Yeah,
nobody
I think that's fair.
Is going to devote more than four rushers. And with the progress that the Giants' offensive line has made, it's obvious that Flowers is much quicker than he was before. Bobby Hart is much quicker than he was before. They both have it instinctively put in them to box because they were training with boxing. They were basically doing what Justin Pugh has been doing. And what transformed Justin Pugh from an average right tackle for his first year, right? And into an elite player because until he was injured, he was PFF's number one ranked guard, like overall, mm-hmm. which is incredible. So the offensive line will hold on. And first of all, we have speed with Evan Engram and Odell Beckham Jr. All of our wide receivers across the board are reliable. Shepard is reliable, Beckham is reliable, Engram is reliable, Marshall is reliable, and Vereen is reliable. Right? Marshall and Engram are physical. They're gonna fight for those yards. They're gonna fight for those 50-50 balls. They're gonna get them down. Right? Odell is really good against with those 50-50 balls because he has amazing vertical ability. So does Evan Engram. Shane Vereen adds an extra layer of unpredictability to the offense because you have to factor him in or else he's going to do what he did against the San Francisco defense in 2015. I think you guys remember that game.
Well, right? there's versatility to your point. I mean, the one thing that I'll jump in and say is, while I think Engram's got a lot of upside, the fact that he hasn't played one game yet, I think we need to at least halt the brakes before we say somebody's reliable or a proven commodity. That's the only thing. I mean, you're right. He's shown a lot in college. To jump the gun and say you know what you're going to get out of him in year one before he's even played one game, we may be getting a little bit ahead of ourselves
I might be reaching
there. Well, I don't think it's a reach. I just don't think it's a guarantee. I guess that's my point.
It's an unknown.
Yeah.
Right?
The other thing, too, let me bring up a point that a lot of people aren't talking about, and you bring it up, is that you have all these this firepower and all this all this talent at the wide receiver position, and I think you nailed it on the head, is the fact that teams are not going to be able to rush six people or five people. They're going to stick with the four, okay? But you know what that's going to do? That is going to open up that running game like you can't believe, okay? So those wide receivers are going to help out the offensive lineman that everybody keeps talking about. It's going to help out the young running backs that we have on the Giants to have, not we. I'm no longer on the team. But the fact is that is going
to – You are in spirit.
Exactly. And that is going to help the Giants running game. And so I think you got to look at that and be happy about getting the Giants running game going, because when you have a good running game, now it kind of goes again. Now you say, okay, we got a running game. What do? We start setting up our play action pass. And there we go. Now we've got five guys we can throw the ball to. So collectively.
Exactly. And one more. Okay, go ahead.
And just collectively, by adding different pieces to the puzzle, this offense has now been able to present itself in a way that teams are going to have to game plan around Odell Beckham and now the running game and things like that. So it's the
perfect summary.
The offense is going to do much better than it did last year, even though everybody thinks that the offensive line is going to hold them back. But when they don't have to deal with five and six guys at the line of scrimmage, you know, because it's a lot easier to block four than it is six. I can tell you that
now. Teams aren't going to dare to rush five or six against this offense where the receivers are so talented, right? So we're basically a versatile, physical, and one more thing, yards after catch. Odell Beckham Jr., we all know about this. Let's not even discuss Odell Beckham Jr. Brandon Marshall, throughout his career, has been fighting for yards after catch every single time he gets the opportunity to. So that's the one thing we know for sure. Shane Vereen, we've seen him fight for yards after he gets the catch. Yep. So we know already that these three guys are going to be, you know, guaranteed yards after catch people. We have Sterling Shepard, who said he's going to improve this ability, which it's not a guaranteed thing, but if what he's saying is right, then that's pretty good. And Evan Ingram in college. Which might not translate to the pros, but in college he was a big yards after catch threat. And also one more thing, real quick, right?
Real quick,
what else you got?
What Evan Ingram does is add versatility to the type of runs we're running. Because here's the thing, Evan Ingram, as you guys know, is not a very good blocker if he's trying to block like linebackers or defensive ends, but he can block in the perimeter against those safeties. So what that does is allow us to run more outside, which we haven't been doing, because last year we were mostly running inside zone, right? But we can add versatility to the type of runs we do and thus give more unpredictability to when Paul Perkins is going to run and how Paul Perkins and where Paul Perkins is going to run. So that just adds an extra layer of unpredictability, which is going to make our offense look really good.
All right, Trace, appreciate the phone call. They did run a bit on the outside with Paul Perkins last season. It wasn't as if everything was run inside. I think, personally, Jeff, the last point that he made, I think Brandon Marshall is a better selling point to say that the blocking's going to improve on the outside more so than Ingram. And once again, it's not that I don't think Ingram can do that. It's just we've got to see it. Marshall's a more proven commodity, much more polished, Jeff. We know as a blocker, just like Amani Toomer was, where you felt if he could get out with the offensive lineman, that's going to be an added layer, an added bonus for the running game.
It's also going to be great for the younger guys to learn under Brandon Marshall about how to block as a wide receiver. Because if you look at some of the other teams around the National Football League where their wide receivers are really good blockers, you see them down the field making plays and blocking these guys. It breaks open big plays. And so, you know, those guys, it's kind of one of those things you have to learn how to do it. And then once you do it better and better. It helps everything. And Brandon Marshall is that kind of guy. He's a physical player. He likes to play physical. It's not that he's out there just, you know, oh, I'm just going to throw you around. He loves to hit guys as a wide receiver. So that's going to carry over to those younger guys who haven't learned much about blocking yet. I will tell you that I've seen Odell and Shepard do some pretty good blocking, but they all got to do it collectively better. And we talk about that all the time. If the wide receivers could be blocking better, we would have got a better run or this and that. Ingram, we'll learn. He's definitely better probably out in space than he is in tight. So we'll see what happens there.
And then Red Ellison is another one to factor into this conversation.
Well, I think this guy's going to be one of the – we don't talk about him much this season. I think this is the way it's going to be. But when you look at the film and you go and grade him, as Dottino will, I mean, he'll get probably a good grade every game, but we won't say much about it. But that's how much he's going to help this team in both running and passing.
The subtle things that don't necessarily always show up.
I mean, for God's sakes, the guy's only caught, you know, a dozen passes in his career. He's a blocking tight end, a little hybrid, maybe a little bit of fullback here and there, but – you know, last year we saw they had to bring one of the tight ends, who wasn't a great blocker to begin with, back in the backfield. It didn't really help much. Now they got a legitimate blocking tight end that can play two positions, and improve the running game in that sense.
Yeah, it's one thing to have somebody that has the frame that you think can block. It's another one to say throw him in the backfield where he's never played before, which is what they were doing it sometimes last season just to get people's feet wet. Ellison, you're right. He's been a fullback because he blocked the way for Adrian Peterson.
Right, it's like me bringing a car that looks like it's really fast to a race, but it don't work.
It does exactly. I mean, it could have the optics, good are the optics if it doesn't deliver?
That thing looks good. I bet that thing's really fast. Well, it doesn't have an engine in it.
Yes, exactly. That would not be good. You wouldn't be going too far. Let's head back to the phone line. 201-939-4513. Dom is in New Jersey. Dom, what's happening?
Hi, Dom.
Hey, Lance. Hi, Jeff. How are you guys?
Doing well, Dom. Good. What do you got for us?
Good. Good. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to speak to Jeff one-on-one. I was looking forward to that, Lance. You ruined it for me.
Well, I mean, you can still talk to Jeff. I'm not necessarily ruining the opportunity. I'm just here along for the ride, so don't let me intrude.
No worries. I hope the commute wasn't too bad. I work right in Midtown, so I'm very familiar with what's been going on with public transit lately. But one of the things, and I actually really liked the last caller. I thought he had a lot of intriguing stuff to say, made a lot of really good points. Definitely the reliability factor as far as Evan Engram, I think, was the only questionable thing for the most part, just because you're right, we've never seen him play snap in pro football before. So I guess we'll see how that plays out. But the main comment I really wanted to talk about here is with regards to training camp. I know that so far I've heard some articles saying that the Giants both have the number one wide receiving core, although, again, not yet proven, seeing all of them on the field, as well as the number one cornerback tandems in the NFL. Now, what I'm excited for is to see those guys line up in training camp against each other, right? I mean, I know that already there's some question as far as the depth at cornerback, but I think with the big four guys that we have at wide receiver will really be able to test, obviously, our big three at quarterback, as well as that fourth spot. You know, I think that fourth spot could be told a lot just through training camp alone, just because they're going to be playing a guy who's supposed to come in and, be another elite receiver for this team. So I really think the four-on-four is really going to be a big help, especially when we play teams like the Eagles, who have picked up a few weapons. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the wide receivers over at Tampa. So I really think that having these four on four will be a huge commodity for us in training camp. So I want to get your guys' thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's a great point, and there's nothing like competition. It makes you better. And when you got what people are calling, the best wide receiver tandem and one of the best cornerbacks groups in the league, getting those guys to practice against each other every single day, it just goes to show you that when they get on Sunday, they pretty much have been practicing against the best guys in the league already. It just makes things a little bit easier. The only thing you have to worry about sometimes is the number ones don't always go against the number ones. They do on one-on-one drills and separate stuff, but a lot of the stuff is, the first team offense is practicing against the second team defense and vice versa. But there will be plenty of times when those matchups happen, and it is something good to watch. And if you want to kind of pay attention to something when you do come out to training camp and watch, take a look at that. That'll be an intriguing matchup. The other matchup you want to watch is the big guys. Go over there. Right now, in my opinion, one of the big position battles in this camp coming up is going to be that defensive tackle position. Who is going to play aside Snacks? Who's going to be that guy? And I think that's one that you have to look out for, because those guys there are going to be going up. They're interior guys. They're going to be going up against John Jerry and Fluker, trying to see who's going to be that right guard. So take a look at some of those competitions in camp if you want to pay attention, because everybody likes to see the ball fly through the air. That's the fun thing.
Sure.
But if you want to really go see some stuff, real football stuff, go watch the defensive lineman and the offensive lineman one-on-one drills. That's real football over there.
Well, especially now since they're going to put the pads on eventually.
Exactly.
As opposed to what we saw during the course of OTAs and minicamp.
And of course, if you want to see real football too, you can always go watch the kickers kicking around.
Well, that goes without saying. I mean, you perfected that art, correct? I mean, nobody perfected the art of not doing much, but still looking good at doing it.
Oh, well, definitely.
That's what I'm saying. You have an experience.
I could act like I was doing something with the best of them. But nobody's going to buy a ticket to go watch the kickers, so that's for sure.
No, even though, in all seriousness, it actually makes sense to focus on the kicking game a little bit this year because you got Aldrick Rosas.
Well, you only got one guy.
Yeah, but more of a reason that you actually may just want to watch it if you do have an opportunity to come down to camp, aside from obviously seeing how he does in the preseason, which is going to really determine how effective he can be.
And, Dom, I don't mean to get away from your call, and we appreciate you calling in, but I was reading an article the other day, because it might have been on Twitter, but there's a lot of questions about, you know, Aldrick, and he's the only guy in camp, and how do you compete? I mean, the NFL is all about competition, and typically, unless you're an established veteran, there's another guy in camp that you're competing with. So I will tell you this, from a perspective, from the kicking perspective, I'll give you this. He is competing. He's competing with other 31 other teams that have another guy on the roster. Okay, so that's the one thing. The second thing, he's competing with a veteran that's not on the roster that easily can be brought in here once the season starts. Okay, so there's your competition outside of here. The competition that you're going to see inside is, and I read it. It said that they're going to, and I've seen this happen. A lot of the two-minute drills that are going to be run in training camp, they're going to come down to Aldrick Rosas making it for wind sprints. Or
so they're going to set up situations,
something
so on the line.
So they're going to put a lot of pressure on this young kid for, if you make it, there's no running. If you don't, everybody runs.
Makes sense.
That's one way you can do it. Because somebody had called in a month or so and said, how do you put competition on a kicker when there's no one else other than the preseason games? I didn't have an answer. And now I know the answer. So they're going to do a lot of situational stuff for him to put a little pressure. You know, obviously you could throw cones at him when he's going to kick, and you can yell and scream and do
loud
horns
music
and things
and,
like
and
that.
All that
but
type. Yeah.
That's really not realistic. So really what you want to do is put a little mental pressure on him that's going to put making a field goal on his shoulders for the rest of the team to run or something like that. So I thought that was pretty good.
Something riding on the kick.
Exactly.
No, I agree with you. I think that makes sense. Just out of curiosity on that topic, Jeff, because you were talking about when you don't have anyone in camp to compete against. Throughout your career, how many times would you say, that you had an actual competitor versus you pretty much knew it was just you against the rest of the veterans in the NFL?
Probably 15 out of my 22 years, I had somebody in camp.
Yeah, somebody. Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of times towards the end of the career, it was really kind of a known that I was, I was good enough that I didn't need to have somebody in there to compete with. They knew my work ethic. They knew I was going to be the guy. But a lot of times it was because of roster spots. So there was a few times when I got into camp, there was another punter in camp, and 1 week later he was gone because there was two defensive linemen that got hurt, and they needed to go sign another defensive lineman. So they said, why do we have this punter in here? We know Jeff's the guy. So they would cut him and bring a defensive lineman in. So it's kind of a roster move sometimes. But younger guys, you rarely see that happen. Younger guys, they stick it out to the last game. And then they flip a coin, whoever charted best or did best in the preseason games, they make the team. That's how it works.
Dom, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dom, for calling in.
I think that's an interesting way to look at training camp in terms of the pressure that may be on Aldrick Rosas without somebody else competing against him. The other thing that I wanted to add, you were talking about the wide receivers, and this was Dom's initial question about how the competition could very well help the receiving corps early on. I thought we got a little bit of a taste of that, Jeff, already during OTAs and minicamp, because with Odell Beckham not around for the majority of it, Marshall went up against Janoris Jenkins. And those two, and since Marshall's new to the team, you could tell, and things are not physical, and things are not overwhelmingly chippy, but you felt that competitive spirit out of the both of them, even though it's very mellow during that course of time. And I thought if they could get up for that, you can only imagine what it's going to be like when they actually put the pads on in training camp.
Well, I look at two things here. I look at the respect level for both of them for each other. And the other thing I look at is that they're competitors. They're pros, okay? I mean, Janoris Jenkins got all that money to come in here last year, and he proved it. Okay, he's not gonna rest on his laurels. He's a worker, and that's why they brought him in here. Brandon Marshall, guess what? He's told us point blank, I got something to prove. You know, people didn't want to sign me. They think I'm old. I'm over the hill. I'm here to prove them wrong. They are going to compete every single day on the field. Those two guys will compete every day. You just wish you had 52 other guys that did the same thing as those guys do every single day. Now, I know you have a lot of them. I'm not trying to throw away any of the other guys that don't work hard. They all work hard, but those guys especially compete every single play. Odell's another one. Odell Beckham, for all of you that don't know, he goes up to Coach McAdoo, and he wants to do extra, routes and this and that, and Coach McAdoo's got to tell you no. He's got to get out of there. You're not running another route. So this is what makes people good and makes them great is competing at practice, and that's what it's all about, and that's all that coaches want. Coaches want players to go out there and compete every single day, both on and off the field. And what I mean about competing off the field, in the weight room, okay? Running extra sprints, doing stuff like that. We heard, you know, Olivia Vernon last year when he gets here, nobody really knows what he does, his work ethic. After practice, he starts running sprints by himself. Before you know it, 2 weeks later, there's seven or eight guys out there doing the same thing. The weight room, same thing. Why aren't you in here early? Let's go. Eric Flowers is in here the whole offseason. This is the off-season competitiveness that you need out of players that coaches love to see. You just hopefully you have everybody on the same board. And I will tell you this, no matter if it's the Giants or any other 31 other teams in the NFL, they will weed those guys out that don't compete. They're out. They don't want them because you know what? You want all those guys to go to war with you, I use that term lightly, on Sunday, okay, to go out there and compete and do everything you can to win football games because it's all about winning.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Let's head back to the lines. Justin is in Lakewood. Justin, what's happening?
Justin.
Hey, how you fellas doing today?
Doing all right, Justin.
Wonderful.
What do you got for us?
All right. Hey, man, I'm going to add to the rave reviews that Justin's been receiving today. Did a great job flying solo.
Thank you. Love it. My ratings are really high.
Skyrocketed
today.
Up.
This is unbelievable. Yeah. I might be getting
the Nielsen ratings are going up.
All right, one quick thing. First of all, I'd like to say great show today. You know, it's always a good show, but a lot of information, especially a couple callers ago, that guy, he really went in depth with a lot of information. So a lot of information today. It was a really good show. Lance, I have a question for you, actually. I was hoping Paul was on today only because he made a comment yesterday about you guys were speaking in regards to Hall of Famers and I believe the list that was made as far as the 25-round draft.
Correct.
And he was saying something about part of his requirement would be the amount of time that guys put in. And he was saying that there were certain guys that he wouldn't be able to vote in because – would you be able to expand on that a little bit? I was hoping to kind of get his perspective because I didn't really quite understand what he meant by that because he said one of the guys that you had said at the end of the show, I remember, was T.O., and he said that that would be one guy that didn't meet his requirements because he didn't have enough time. So I'm wondering, I'm like, well, this guy's second all-time in receiving yards and third all-time touchdowns. I mean, I would think that guy would have
He did play a long time, Well, and that's why you almost have to have the Paul Dottino interpreter next to you. I guess I've been around him so long. Some things go in one ear and go out the other. But with that being said, I do remember us having that conversation. The guy that I think I brought up at the time, Justin, who I think is better suited for what you're alluding to is Terrell Davis. Because Terrell Davis is a Hall of Famer, but the point is Davis did not have those unbelievable numbers for a long period of time. He did it in a very short period of time. Hall of Fame worthy, impressive, accomplished, great resume, just wasn't around for, you know, like a decade of doing that, like some of the other running backs.
7, 8 years, maybe?
I think, it may have even been less if you look at the amount of numbers. And part of that was because of health. So that, to me, was my takeaway. Justin, in terms of what Paul was pointing to, that he wants to see, if he's going to put somebody in the Hall of Fame, he wants to see that you do it for, you know, about a good 9 to 10 year period, which is understandable. But I always say there's exceptions to the rule. For example, you know, Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson, to me, is a Hall of Famer. He decided to retire relatively young. Are we going to hold that against the guy because he chose his well-being overall or whatever it was to retire? So I'm going to judge you, and this is just my opinion, I'm going to judge you for the time you played. If you were a top echelon player, you did it consistently, you remained durable for the time that you did put up those numbers, to me, that is worthy of still putting you in the Hall of Fame because you have to look at every individual case separately. You can't compare A to B if the sample size is not the same. It's unfair then to both players.
Right, and I totally agree with that. And even to add to that, I mean, I'd venture to say that if I go down on a limb and say if Calvin Johnson were to even come back right now, that he could probably continue his dominance at some, you know, at some level just because of his sheer size and just what he brings to the game as far as skill-wise. So, yeah, I totally agree with that. It's definitely a case-by-case basis. But I just wanted to make sure I was hearing correctly. You know, I didn't, you know, I didn't quite understand exactly the full context of what was said with that. But in my opinion, Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, that was just my question. I'll let you guys go. I know you're running short on time. I appreciate you taking my call. Once again, Jeff, good job. Keep up the good work.
I appreciate it, my man. Thanks
for
calling in.
Appreciate the phone call.
All right.
Just out of curiosity, Jeff, I mean, listen, you played the game for so long. What's your opinion in terms of the Hall of Fame? Do you like the process? Do you think it's too political?
No, I don't like the process at all. In fact, I really don't. I'm not a big fan of it. I know that a lot of players, you know, they politic for it. They do this and that. In my opinion, it's never gonna change. It's always going to be this way. You know, the only way that it can change is that there's criteria, and every
which
position has one, which
yeah.
is impossible. But you know, and there's never going to be somebody that gets in that everybody agrees, and somebody that doesn't get in, everybody doesn't agree. It's just like it doesn't. It's just hard. It's a hard thing to do. Okay. The one thing that I don't understand is that how it takes so long for a punter to get into the Hall of Fame and Ray Guy a few years ago, and he gets in on the senior ballot because they have to put a guy in on the senior ballot. But it took him for so many years. Remember, punting and kicking, it's part of the game. It's a position. It's even though you're only playing five or six plays a game, it's still a play. It's still a position.
Field position defines
field position.
Game. Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, a lot of times, and listen, I'm not politicking for punters and kickers to get into Hall of Fame. I'm just saying that sometimes it doesn't make sense to me, the process. You know, and again, this year, finally, Morton Anderson gets in. I mean, he's very worthy of the Hall of Fame, and relatively quickly. So that's a good sign. I mean, he's only been retired for maybe 10 years now, but he's in. So that's actually a good thing. But yeah, it's a tough topic. It really is. And
oh,
same
absolutely.
Thing with baseball and everything else.
Yeah.
It's just
controversial.
Yeah, it really is.
The debates go left and right.
Yep.
Just to emphasize what I was alluding to, I just looked up Terrell Davis's numbers. So from 1995 to 1998, he had at least 1,100 yards each and every season, was one of the top running backs in the game, found the end zone. I mean, he had that 1998 season, 2,008 rushing yards, 21 touchdowns to help the Broncos win back-to-back Super Bowls. Then all of a sudden the injuries start to set in, 99, 2000, 2001. You could tell here, Jeff, struggles to even get to 300 rushing yards. So
yeah, is that
211, 282, and then 701. But, right. you know, keep in mind, he only played four games. He only played five games. So the point is, Davis is an example of four seasons through the roof and then injuries set in.
And four good season, good teams. I mean, that 2,008 yards, that's what put him over the top because those are Hall of Fame. That's a Hall of Fame number. You know, there are not too many of those.
In terms of, amount of players in NFL history that have been able to surpass 2,000 yards.
So, you know, you look at that you take that number out of there, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
I would agree. And I think they're also taking into consideration, and maybe this should not be a big thing, but the back-to-back Super Bowls and helping Denver win that. He did it himself, but still, it
helps.
Well,
a lot of people, you know, probably including Tutino, feel that maybe, you know, you should have a Super Bowl in there for Hall of Fame stuff, but you look at Dan Marino, okay?
Yeah,
Dan Marino doesn't have it. You know, it's just that's the thing. There's so many things that creep into the process and the analytics, if you will, of the process. It's just never a perfect science.
Because everybody has their own point of view, and there's no clear-cut criteria across the board. I agree with you. I think that's well put in terms of one of the problems with the Hall of Fame, not just in the NFL, but across the world of sports. Let's head back to the lines. We got John in Florida. John, what's happening?
Hi, John.
Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
You're
thanks
welcome.
For making
where
it.
Where are you at in Florida?
Gainesville.
Oh, you're
uh-oh.
A Gator guy. Okay.
Yeah, that's not right. Miami territory.
Hello, are you there? Hello. Yeah, we got you.
okay.
We won't hang up on you.
I'm sure you can imagine it's hard to find Giants fans down here.
Oh, I bet.
Especially where I'm at.
The question is, though, John, is it hard to find Hurricanes fans?
Oh, even harder.
That's the most important question.
No,
this is not about the Giants. This is about more of a Miami Hurricanes versus Florida Gators conversation.
Yeah, there is no Hurricanes.
That's the big
fans
thing
in
Gainesville.
Though.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. I'm too far north for the Hurricanes. Lots of Jags and some Bucks fans here.
Sure.
Yeah, I've had to pick the Bucks as my second team.
All right.
Okay.
That'll be a cool game. But I know we're short on time. Let me get to my question here. About our strength of schedule, I know there's been, you know, a lot of people have been kind of complaining that it's difficult and been nervous about it. But honestly, the way I see it is I like it. I'd rather see the Giants go up against the tough teams because if they can't get through the season or at least get to a wild card, then I don't really think there's any hope to begin with. So I'm happy with it.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, I think that the strength of schedule stuff, it changes every week because now the teams that you're going, you know, whatever it is, that, you know, is that the strength of schedule coming into the season?
Correct. Okay. Well, the strength of schedule is based on the 2016 records,
right,
though. So
okay.
To me, it's a meaningless statistic
because
the rosters change and the teams change.
Yeah. So, but you know, it kind of goes what you just said. If you're going to play good teams and you can beat those good teams, you probably have a better recipe for success going into the playoffs. Being able to know that you're going to be up against the best teams going in the playoffs. So, you know, these teams that skate in there at 8-8 or 9-7, you know, you never know. But we also never know about the Cowboys team that goes 14-2. You know, you think that they're going to just dominate.
Correct,
and
nobody necessarily saw that. Exactly.
Yeah,
so I mean, there's a lot of things that are unpredictable when it comes, obviously, to the NFL season. But I just don't think you can look at it so much of who the Giants are playing and what they did in 2016 when you don't know how injuries are going to play a role. And there's always those teams that look great on paper, and it just never translates to the field.
Like we talked about earlier, there's a lot of teams that aren't going to make the playoffs that did last year, and there's some sleeper teams that are going to make it. So, but
Would you agree though that these 8-8 predictions that I'm seeing all over the place? I mean, they're a joke.
Well, I'm fine with an 8-8 prediction. I'd rather have the team being predicted to go 8-8 than to go 14-2 because I always believe that this team. Even when I played on it, I just feel like when you are picked to do well, you have so much pressure on you. When you're picked to do 8-8, you're going to say, oh, you know what? Everybody thinks we're 8-8. That's fine. Let's just go out and show them what we can do. You know, so it takes a little pressure off of you as a player.
That's a great point. All right. And one more question. I'll take it off here.
Sure.
Engram versus Allison, who gets more snaps? And also Engram's speed versus OBJ. Is he really faster than OBJ? Thanks, guys.
Okay, sure.
Hi, John.
I think Ellison will get more snaps because he'll be in there for more plays, running plays, things like that. And I think it'll be, you know, it won't be a huge difference, but it will be a difference. How about you? You think so?
In terms of what, Beckham?
No, as far as Engram and Ellison. Playing snap time. It'll be close. I think.
I would agree with you. I think a lot of people going in think that, you know, Engram is going to be a guy they're never going to want to take off the field. But if Ellison proves his versatility and he's healthy, they're going to want to run plays with Ellison.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. It's just like we were talking about Will Johnson last year, Jeff. If Will Johnson's healthy,
I think that probably
changes the dynamics of, you know, who's in and how the tight end reps are broken down. So I would agree with you. I would lean more towards 50-50. Then go in, think that even if Engram explodes early, that it's going to be extremely lopsided. They're going to find ways to utilize Ellison.
Yeah, and I think that I don't think there's enough has been said about what happened to Johnson last year in that running back position. That created a whole different scenario for that offense going into the season last year that they couldn't find a fullback. They couldn't even find a fullback that they felt good enough to sign to come in here. So they went away from it. And they went away and they went to 11. They went to that personnel and they ran their offense because they were snake bit as far as their personnel. They couldn't do it. Then depth and everything else. That's going to be a lot different this year. You watch. It's not going to be completely different, but you are going to see different formations to create different matchups. And when you have Engram and Beckham and Marshall and all these other guys.
And Green too.
Yeah,
on the field
so this
again.
Is going to be able to be a little bit more creative as far as personnel groups and formations. As far as the speed, listen, that's a 40 speed. There is no way I can even imagine that Engram comes close to the speed that Odell Beckham is, especially from lateral and just making people miss. I would take Odell Beckham in that any day. And remember, there's quite a bit of a size and weight difference here too. I mean, Engram's a big, he's 6'4", you know, 240 pounds or whatever he is. And, you know, what's Odell Beckham, 5'11", 6 foot maybe?
Yeah,
pounds?
Of course. No, you have to take that into consideration. And like you said, I mean, anybody who can run around in their underwear, then when they put the helmet and the pads on, does that hurt the speed of the player? Does it not make a difference? I remember, for example, earlier in the offseason, Eli Apple had mentioned that they were monitoring his speed and that he feels he's faster. And that was obviously in comparison to what he had done at that time last year without the pads. So it was somewhat of a fair comparison. But like you say, Jeff, when they put the pads on and the helmets, then I think we could determine truly if they picked up speed or
there's
not.
40 speed and there's game speed. And and some guys are faster on game day than they are their 40. And some guys are slower on game day than they are in their 40. But I just think that there. I would take Odell to answer his question. I would think that Odell is a little quicker.
Now, where did your 40 rank? Would you say that you were faster with the pads and the helmets on, or did it really not make a difference?
I clocked in at a forever.
A forever? Oh, look at that. Wow, boy. You were working on that one quite some time.
I've used that so many times.
That was so smooth in terms of the response. I know somebody's asked you. I thought I was going to be original and get some type of original response out of you.
If I had to make the team run in a 40, then I wouldn't be sitting on this show right now. I could tell you right now, there's no way. There's game speed. I could run off the field pretty quickly. I don't have to be a 4.5 to do that either.
You run to the bench or the sideline. Nobody was faster than Jeff in that department. Want to get to one or two tweets before we wrap things up because there were people that couldn't get to the phones on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We were talking about the Hall of Fame. So Mark in Chicago at Mark FRM Chicago brings up Gale Sayers as another running back. Short period of time, thrived. And then obviously wasn't able to do it for a long period of time. So that's another example, like a Terrell Davis, because he points out he only had 2 1,000-yard seasons, 5,000 on his career, and he's also in the Hall of Fame. Very explosive and a unique player. So that's another good example in terms of looking at players who had short rates of success. A.J. Marshall, A.J. Marshall 3. Yesterday's show we were talking about bold predictions. He throws out he feels Olivier Vernon is going to have double figures in sacks this season. Had 8.5 last season.
Hurt.
And was dealing with the wrist injury.
Right.
Now, this is actually somewhat of a tease for our upcoming Factor Fiction article, so I don't want to give away all of my thoughts, but we did put into the debate about whether or not JPP and whether or not Vernon could both reach double digits this season. And that was one of the statements we sort of had some fun with. So that's something to at least think about. You know, Vernon, 8.5.
That's something to get excited about.
Correct. 8.5. He played every single game, was dealing with the wrist injury. The question is JPP. I think he's the tougher one to try to figure out, Jeff, because he's had 2 seasons in his career where he got double-digit sacks.
Well,
he had to play 16 games to get that. Outside of that, has fallen slightly under.
He has, and but I tell you how he's going to get over it. And obviously, I probably just gave away my over-under. But the fact is, I think he's going to get over it because, number one, he's healthy. Okay? He got that groin all taken care of. He's coming in. And number two, he just has no distractions. There's nothing about being on a franchise tag. Am I going to get my deal? What am I going to do? All this guy's got to do now is stay healthy and go out and be JPP, and those numbers will prove themselves. That's my take on it. I think Olivier Vernon is the other guy that just, like you said, if he got 8.5 sacks playing hurt, that guy's a monster when he's not. So between those two guys, I think that they do it. I really do. So I'm hoping that I went over on my thing. So
for that, all right, that's more of a fresh statement. So I don't know if we put you to the test yet.
I think actually that might have been one of our 30 days. Maybe
you may have thrown that in there as part of your answer. Yes. Well, speaking of 30 questions in 30 days, a nice segue. You can continue to check out all of those questions that are put up each and every day leading into the start of training camp late next week. No Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow, but we will be back up and running on Monday. And starting next week, we go back to a full five day week slate of programming, so no more of these four-a-day shortened weeks. And we gave you some bonus time today as my apology, because I know those of you who are looking forward to the Jeff Eagle solo show, I intruded on that. That's why we went a little bit longer. So hopefully you enjoyed the bonus time. With that being said, we certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in on this Thursday. You can check out the archive, which will be up later today on Giants.com. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.